God saved me for a reason, but I'm still searching for what that reason is. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Hello? I know God saved me for a reason, but I guess I'm still searching for what that reason is.
Too much blood of Christ.
It's a miracle. You are with child.
Out of all the women in the world,
why did he choose me?
How can we trust what's inside you?
Suffering is love. Suffering. Is love.
Welcome to the latest episode of Fresh Cuts. This is Mike. Joining me as always, it's Mr. Venom. What's up, Venom?
Greetings and salutations, potential nuns. I wonder if any of them listen to this show. Anyway, I'm doing pretty well. How the hell are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. And I just it clicked in my head. We're doing this movie on Easter Day, which is kind of funny. And it wasn't even purposely planned.
I actually watched it today for a second time, and at the end of the movie, when you know the event at the end of the movie occurs and the house lights came up, some guy yelled out "Happy Easter," and the whole theater burst out in the laughter. So that was pretty fun.
That's hilarious. All right. Also with us, it's Don and Ellie. What's up, Don?
Yeah, what's going on? Always happy to be here.
All right. Well, the movie in question we are talking about, Immaculate. I think we mentioned on the last episode there was kind of a double release weekend, and we did Late Night with the Devil on the previous episode. If you haven't heard that one yet, check it out. Or save it for those who haven't seen it. You might want to save it till it's Shutter release next month. Today we are talking about Immaculate, Neon Pictures, starring Sydney Sweeney, who's become kind of she's in a lot of stuff lately, and I know she's been in some B horror movies like early in her career, but this might be like her first in a horror movie that I can think of. But Immaculate, and let's see the synopsis off IMDb. Cecilia, a woman of devout faith, is one perfect Italian countryside where she is offered a new role at an illustrious. But it becomes clear to Celia that her new home harbors dark and horrifying secrets. Ooh, okay. We'll get into those dark and horrifying secrets a little bit later, but first up, let's talk general about Immaculate. Venom, I trust you, being the one who has seen it, will maybe have the most to say for general thoughts, but we'll find out. What do you think?
I think I always have the most to say for general thoughts, man. I love to talk. Like, I haven't figured that out yet. Last year, we actually had a dual religious horror release as well, with When Evil Lurks opening the same weekend as Exorcist Believer. So last weekend, as it is a week later, once again, we get two religious horror movies coming out. Well, religious might be a misnomer for last night, Late Night with the Devil. Anybody who's seen it or listened to that episode knows it does have religious overtones, but religion isn't actually an aspect of the film. So my whole point is that unfortunately, Late Night with the Devil, in my opinion, is the far superior of the two films. Now, Immaculate is still a very solid film. I actually enjoyed it more after the second watch. On first watch, I thought it was a little slow, taking a little bit too much time to get to what we needed to get to. And the movie's only, it's 90 minutes. I think it's like an hour and 32 minutes. So it's a quick runtime. I'm not necessarily saying that the pacing was bad. It's just that if character development isn't something that you're into and you just want to kind of get to the action, you're going to have a lot to get through in this one. The first act is just, you know, like I said, a lot of character development, a lot of setup, setting up the monastery, setting up all the people in the monastery, everything else, before we finally get to the second act and start seeing a little bit of, you know, potential supernatural elements start to rear their heads. Overall, like I said, I did enjoy this movie. This movie is very, very good. Not quite great. It's bordering on great. But like I said, the pacing, not so much the pacing, but just how long it takes to get to the action might be an issue for some people. Now, these performances are all great. I'm not familiar with Sydney Sweeney. I'd never watched Euphoria or any of the other things that she's really done. But I was very impressed with her performance in this. You know, a young actress who's showing some really, really good range, you know, from pain and grief, happiness, confusion, just she runs the gamut of emotions in this one, anger. So her performance is great. Really, I have no issues with any of the performances in this movie. Maybe there was one sister in the movie that maybe, I don't know, it kind of... It what was her name? Was it Isabella? The nun that introduces Cecilia. Yeah,
yeah, I'm shit with names. That sounds familiar.
Exactly. Yeah, but the shit nun. I don't know. Her performance bothered me. Like it felt too hard that she was trying to be an antagonistic foil for this movie. And then as you watch the movie, you realize, oh, they kind of are setting her up for that, but it just doesn't forgive the way that she treats Cecilia when she first gets there. You know, I understand the horror hierarchy of characters. You're going to have the one bitch who's been there long enough who hates, you know, any new people that show up. And obviously we don't know why until later in the film, but just her performance was the only one that maybe left me a little sour. Pretty much every other performance in this film is really good. And then the ending. Oh, my friends, let me tell you, this ending made this little Satanist so happy. Just the implications of that ending and just everything that Sister Cecilia has to go through that eventually leads to that decision that she makes at the end. It's just so glorious. So, yeah, for a guy like me, this was a very, very satisfying ending. I literally left the theater both times with a giant smile on my face. And on Easter Sunday morning to watch this and to watch that ending. Obviously, we're being ambiguous now. If you've seen the film, you know what we're talking about. If you haven't, you're probably scratching your head wondering what the hell we're implicating. But obviously, we'll get into that in our walkthrough. But yeah, overall, this is a very good film, solid film, great performances, good score. Decent cinematography, nothing too special with cinematography, good set design, the monastery's done really well, decent costume design with all the nuns and the priests and everyone else. Overall, I don't have really a whole lot to nitpick with this movie. I think just, you know, the slow going of the first act is going to be most people's biggest issue. And if you are a very heavily religious person, oh, this movie is probably going to piss you off. And I'm all on board for that. I'm on board for pissing off every Christian possible with this movie. I'm sure some of you have seen some of the backlash that Sydney Sweeney has gotten for this movie from the conservative right, the Christian right, I should say. Just a lot of people panning this film as just, you know, of, you know, Satan doing Satan things, you know, even though Satan has almost nothing to do with this film. But again, we'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, overall, I had a really good time with this movie. I'm surprised how much I liked it on the second watch. I was worried that I was going to be bored because of the issues that I had with some of the pacing on my first watch. I didn't have any of those issues on my second watch. I was really just kind of concentrating on characters, trying to see if any of the characters maybe tipped their hat a little early. Because obviously, you know, things like that would be out of context the first time you watch the movie. But after you know where the movie is going, what the ending is, you kind of start to look around and try to see if anybody's tipping their hat. And I did notice a couple of instances of that. I mean, that's pretty common in most movies like this that have a big reveal at the end or a mystery, if you will. So, yeah, overall, a little bit of gore. You know, not really a whole lot of kills. This is not a high body count film by any stretch. You know, we do get a couple of quick, you know, kills in the third act during our finale. But that's about it when it comes to kind of gore and kills. So if that's what you're looking for, if you're looking for a high body count, yeah, this movie definitely isn't it. But I still do recommend this movie. This is a very well-made movie. When I saw it the first time, I saw it with Sydney Sweeney in the theater. She was there in person doing an intro. She talked about how this movie has been a passion project of her for almost 10 years since she first read this treatment or, you know, screenplay, whatever it is. She knew that she wanted to do this movie, you know, even when she was still underage. So the fact that she finally got to do this was kind of like a dream for her. And just to see that big beaming smile on her face, you know, because she sees this theater full of people that are about to watch her movie, you know, it just it makes you appreciate someone who's doing what they love. And it definitely seems like Sydney Sweeney's doing what she loves right now. So kudos to her and kudos to Immaculate. Because like I said, in a slow year like 2024, this is still one of the more exceptional films we've gotten. Maybe in a stronger year, like in a 2018 or a 2019, this wouldn't be nearly as highly regarded. But obviously, you know, any of our loyal listeners know all three of us have had issues with 2024 being kind of lackluster in the horror genre so far, but you know, we're looking at what, like 2-3 weeks in a row now of solid films. You know, and I say this before I hear my co-host's opinions on Immaculate, but as far as I'm concerned, 3 weeks in a row now of, you know, maybe not all three being exceptional films, potential top 10 candidates, though one of them was, but the other two were still solid, refreshing movies. You know, to actually see some good horror in 2024 is it's making me feel better for the rest of the year. And for those who don't know, I actually got to go see a screener of a film that's going to be releasing in a couple of more weeks. And if anybody knows anything about Don and myself, you know we love our creature features. We love our giant creature movies. And I got a chance to see Sting. I'll talk a little bit more about that later because I'm sure potentially it may be a movie that we review here on Fresh Cuts because I don't see anything else being released in theaters the week of April 12th. But it's been a great week for me, my friends, getting to see Godzilla Kong two times now. Again, anyone who knows me knows Godzilla is an absolute favorite of mine. Getting to see a couple of religious horror movies coming out in theaters. Again, it's a subgenre that I adore, so awesome to see that. And then getting to go to a secret screener of Sting was just awesome. So, yeah, I'm going to step off my soapbox now because I'm having way too good a time and turn the mic back over to Mike.
All right. And with that, I will turn it right back to Don and Nelly. What are your general thoughts on Immaculate?
Yeah, I don't have much else to add. I'm kind of right in line with Venom. I think he's maybe just a little bit higher than I am just because I think the third act kind of appeals to him a little bit more, which I'm a big fan of as well. I love a lot of what happens, but I do recognize that a lot of his tropes are pretty much covered with what happens. So, yeah, I understand where he's coming from with that one. So, I think that's pretty much, you know, I don't really see a lot of where I just see a lot of where he's coming from here with, you know, the slow pace. For me, it was more just grief porn. Ugh. I'm really getting sick of that crap. I really don't care about how hard your life is. I don't give a shit anymore. But yeah, aside from that, you know, again, kind of, you know, making the first half a little bit, you know, difficult to get through. Yeah, there's really not a whole lot that I can, you know, really say else about it. You know, a lot of what he's covered is right there. Build up is, you know, it's slow, but I do like where we come out at the end of it. Some of the, you know, the early scenes around the monastery do have kind of like a really fine, you know, understated sense of tension that, you know, just builds and builds when you start getting all these reveals. And, you know, again, I don't really want to spoil too much just because a lot of, you know, a lot of what goes on in the third act is kind of, you know, is presented as, you know, these big revelations and these big reveals. So I'm not really going to say too much about it, but yeah. I mean, again, I'm trying to like struggle coming up with something different or something else he said, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. I did recognize Sydney from another early film. Along Came the Devil, I think. Or was
it? Wow, she's in that?
I think it's either Along Comes the Devil or Here Comes the Devil, or I remember watching it like way back. It was just some film I happened to come across and I didn't think much about it. And when I saw her in this, it reminded me of that film, but I can't remember which one it was. I think it's called Along Comes the Devil or Here Comes the Devil. I don't remember. But I like I said, I remember watching that and I remember seeing her in that one. And it was one of those that's like, oh, you know, you don't really think much about it. And then when you see them later on and you make the connection, it, you know, kind of makes a little bit of sense. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm kind of, you know, again, don't really have much else to say, but I think the only other thing appropriate that I can say is, you know, because it's baseball season, might as well quote one of the best baseball lines of all time. That's three wins in a row, gentlemen. It's called a winning streak.
I love it. Yeah, and Don, you are correct. Sydney Sweeney was in Along Came the Devil 2018.
Along Comes the Devil. Okay, yeah, that sounds familiar. Like yep. I said, it was one of the two. I just couldn't remember. But like, it was just one of those. I happened to stumble across it. I didn't think much of it, and it was just a film to watch that I saw. So, but yeah, like I said, I mean, three in a row. Thank fucking God. Yeah, back to you, Mike.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I will say three in a row that definitely I did not regret spending my time with. So as far as this one goes, I thought it was good. Like, it was a good, solid film. I think some of the initial praise, I actually think, like, when I'm looking at a movie like this, I think it is great for, like, younger horror fans that maybe haven't seen a lot of the movies that this takes inspiration from. Hopefully this is a good entry point for them, and they start looking into, like, other, I guess you could say, numbsploitation, or even stuff like a Rosemary's Baby or something like that, because this definitely takes a lot of tropes.
Oh, if we can get a bunch of Sydney Sweeney fans to start watching Women Behind Bars, please, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. It's like, I know Sydney Sweeney said it's a passion project of hers, but I'm sure the studios were glad to cast her too in the lead, because she has kind of like that girl appeal with the younger audiences right now. So hey, if that's what it takes, like a good solid movie to bring in those audiences and maybe turn them on to the genre overall, then I'll take it. It's funny because when I'm sitting in the theater for this, I see the trailer for the first Omen, and then the two movies, then like the images of the two movies start blending together, because I'm like, holy shit, we got another movie with nuns in it coming out with some sinister things going on. But as far as the macro goes, yeah, I think Venom's a little bit higher than me on it, but I still overall thought it was really well done for what it wanted to be. This kind of feels like a kind of like a slimmed down version of what we would have got like in like the 70s, you know, when it comes to this type of plot, these characters, the big convent like set piece, living as a nun there, going through, you know, not just all the sinister stuff, but just the aspect of being like kind of like that new person in a new location, feeling like you stick out, try to, you know, get into the routine of everyday life there. There's a lot going in here, but they definitely trim it down to make it a 90-minute movie. I agree with Don. Like, they definitely play on, like, the past trauma of, like, of the main character to kind of push things forward. Now, I have only seen it once, and it was like a week ago, because since I knew I was going to be out of town for like most of the time that I usually would see a movie. So maybe during spoilers, Venom can refresh my memory, because there were some actions taken by other nuns that I did kind of question at the time, and now it's been like a week, and I'm like trying to think like back on more specifics, because obviously, you know, without spoiling anything, you know pretty much, okay, there's something more than meets the eye, there's something sinister going on here. But what I didn't always get a good handle on was, like, who necessarily knew or who was, like, just a pawn like her to it. Because there were some actions that other nuns took that I wasn't sure if that was just the nun hierarchy having nothing to do with the even deeper sinister stuff, or if some of it was linked together. But we can get into that during spoilers. But yeah, I would recommend seeing this in theater. It's plenty good enough to spend your time seeing in a theater. I would support this, because also Neon Pictures. I'm glad that Neon was the one that put this out, because while Venom is correct, there's not a ton of kills. I feel like when we do get the gore, they really go for it in the shots we do get. Like, I wasn't expecting, like, gore like that. It's not plentiful, but when we do get it, it is solid and it looks good. And some of it's pretty, like, harsh. There's also a sequence, I think, in the third act, or at least approaching the third act, where our main character pulls off some kind of stunt that I won't say, and I thought that was really well done. Story elements like that is something I really liked about this, because if you're watching it, if you're a seasoned horror vet, there's a lot of the stuff in this movie you're going to be like, yeah, it's good, but I've seen it done better elsewhere. But then a stunt like that gets pulled, it's like, oh, that's cool. That's like something I don't necessarily see in every single similar movie. So overall, yes, I would say a thumbs up. Go see it. Support horror. I mean, hey, if we're getting multiple weeks in a row of solid quality horror films, take advantage, because to me it's always better when you get them in the theater. And this is something that you got to support to keep movies like this in the theater. If you say you're tired of remakes and sequels, go see the stuff that isn't a remake or a sequel. And I'll leave it at that for now. So back to you, Venom.
Oh man, remake or sequel. The thing is that some of the tropes in this movie are so familiar that to an old grizzled horror fan like me, it still feels like a remake, you know what I mean? There's so, like the movie doesn't start to get original, like truly original, until the scene that Mike just alluded to. From that point through the rest of the film, there's a lot of originality being displayed in the events that take place in the film. So I definitely see how the younger audiences would definitely kind of gravitate towards this one a lot more. Plus, you know, Sydney Sweeney being, like, you know, like Mike said, kind of the it girl right now. Euphoria fans are probably going to flock to this film. You know, a lot of hopefully it'll bring some younger eyes to the genre. You know, fans of Euphoria that maybe never watched horror before, but are such big fans of Sydney Sweeney that they'll watch anything that she's in. So hopefully that happens. I feel like the movie is high enough quality that it should bring new fans to the genre, if Sydney Sweeney is bringing non-horror fans over to Immaculate. But other than that, though, I don't know what else we could really talk about that's spoiler-free. I mean, we've talked about performances, set design, score. There actually is more, now that I sit here and think about it, yeah, there actually is more gore in here than I gave it credit for. There's probably three major scenes of gore in this one, one of them being Head and Shoulders better than the rest, but still, there is a decent amount of blood in this movie. But like I said, it does tend to happen towards the end of the film in the third act. It's all most of the kills in this movie are kind of concentrated towards the end. So just a lot of like psychological horror going on and mystery solving and things like that. So that's about all I have. Do you guys have anything else before we get into a walkthrough?
No, I'm good. I'm just always afraid of saying something that's a spoiler.
I hear you.
Yeah, I think I'm ready for the walkthrough.
All right, this one should be fairly quick. Our movie opens up with a nun attempting to escape a monastery. We see her steal a set of keys from the Mother Superior. She runs out of the monastery, but pretty much as soon as she hits the yard, all the exterior lights of the house turn on, of the monastery turn on. She finally gets to the gate, which is locked. And as she's going through this big key ring of keys, we notice four individuals dressed in black very calmly walking towards her, not giving chase and running, literally just ominously walking towards her. Finally, she is able to get the gate open. Unfortunately, the gate is also chained up, so it's locked by an actual lock on the gate, but then there is a chain with an additional lock on it. She's able to get that first lock open, but at this point, the four, in dark individuals are getting closer, so she tries to squeeze through. She is barely able to squeeze through the opening, but unfortunately, one of the dark figures grabs her by the leg and unceremoniously breaks her leg against one of the posts of the fence, of the gate that she's trying to get through. The scene goes black. When the scene fades back up, we see the nun, and she is in a enclosed space. I'm pretty sure most horror fans would recognize it as a coffin, a makeshift wooden box acting as a coffin. We hear the sound effects of dirt being thrown on top of the coffin. The nun inside is speaking Italian the whole time. And she's screaming and asking for help. Apparently, she had a book of matches with her, so she's able to light up matches, which is probably the wrong thing to do when you're trapped in a casket, folks, because you're wasting your oxygen lighting those matches. I mean, granted, if any of us ever find ourselves in that situation, we're fucked either way. But I just scientifically, don't waste your oxygen by lighting matches and shit. So anyway. The scene eventually does go black with the nun continuing to scream for help, and we get to our title card. After our title card, we're introduced to Sister Cecilia. She is our main character, played by Sydney Sweeney. She is at a customs office after just having landed in Italy. The customs officers are basically complaining because since she doesn't have a round-trip ticket, she has a one-way ticket, they have to do additional checks on her, like what is she doing in Italy, blah, 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 blah. They kind of give her a hard time. One of them makes kind of a snide comment of what a waste, this young, pretty girl going to become a nun, such a waste, blah, blah, blah. She ends up getting taken to the monastery, and once we get to the monastery, we meet all the key players. We meet the Mother Superior. We meet Father Tedeschi. He is the main priest here. He's not the cardinal by any stretch. We actually do have a cardinal character in this one, but he's like of the priests in the monastery. He's like the main one who's, handling most of the business for the monastery. We're introduced to a couple other characters, too. I mentioned Sister Isabella from earlier. She is the one who's tasked with showing Sister Cecilia around the monastery on her first day, letting her know what's expected of her, blah, blah, blah. As I mentioned earlier, she comes off as a total cunt, which I hate those characters. It's like there's no reason to hate the new person just because they're the new person. Like that just makes you the shitty person. So anyway, that evening, the evening of her first night there, she is scheduled to take her vows. After taking her vows and becoming a full-fledged nun, she has a conversation with Father Tedeschi. This is where Don's grief porn kind of starts up. We find out that when she was 12 years old, she had an accident while ice skating on a frozen river. Of course, the ice broke. Very similar to The Omen Part 2, if I remember correctly. And what was the I can't think of it now, but there was another movie with breaking ice. I think Christopher Walken was in it. Dead Zone. Thank you, Dead Zone. Anyway, so like I said, Sister Cecilia had an accident when she was 12 years old. The ice broke. She was pulled under. She actually died. Her heart stopped for, as she says, almost 7 minutes. They were eventually able to revive her. And from that moment, she basically just became, you know, very pious, very religious. You know, she had the idea that God saved her for a specific purpose. So we basically hear about her being in working for the church in the States, you know. Unfortunately, her congregation ended up getting closed. Her church ended up getting closed due to lack of attendance. And, you know, there was no opportunities for her in the States. And then out of nowhere, she receives a letter from this Father Tedeschi, basically inviting her to be a nun at this monastery, and to the point where he even sent her a round trip ticket before, she, you know, even knowing if she would accept. Of course she accepts, and here we are. So that night, after she takes her vows and she has this conversation with Father Tedeschi, she ends up hearing a woman crying in the monastery. She decides to search for the sound, which is very brave for someone who's there on their first day, but she hears crying. She ends up finding a nun who's dressed in an all-black robe except for her face. Her face is covered with like a red linen mask, with no facial features on it other than like the bumps of the actual person's face. So, you know, just very ominous looking, like a solid black robe, but just red face, you know, linen covering their face. It's kind of interesting looking. After bumping into the Mother Superior while in this room with the crying red face nun, the Mother Superior kind of, you know, just starts talking to her, telling her a little bit about the monastery. Then suddenly we see her put on a pair of like rubber gloves, and she grabs what looks like a railroad spike out of a glass box. She takes the railroad spike and she actually shows it to Sister Cecilia. I'm calling it a railroad spike because that's what it looks like. I'll change the name of it once I reveal what it is, which is right now. As it turns out, this spike is literally one of the iron spikes that was used to hang Jesus Christ up on the cross. How to verify this? No fucking idea. But this is what they believe, that they have one of the actual iron spikes from Jesus' crucifixion, and it's like a holy relic to them. They keep it in an ornate glass box. So anyway, after showing Sister Cecilia the iron spike, she hands it to her. And Cecilia holds it with both of her hands, ungloved, mind you, and she's holding it, and suddenly she starts getting lightheaded. And after a couple of minutes, she ends up passing out. The next morning, she thinks that she passed out because she drank too much wine the night before at her, you know, taking her vows celebration. And then we get a quick montage of them showing what the monastery is. This monastery it's almost like a retirement home for nurses, for nuns, excuse me, not for nurses. It's a retirement home for nuns. So basically old nuns that are nearing the end of their life, you know, they basically come to this monastery if they haven't already been there their whole lives anyway. But they go there and they basically, it's like a hospice. That's probably the better term for it. It's like a hospice for nuns. It's basically where they go to die. So, you know, we see a montage of them taking care of some old patients. We see Cecilia meeting a couple, I say patients, but they're just retired nuns. Well, I don't know if nuns ever retire actually, but whatever. She meets a couple of them, you know, is friendly with them, blah, blah, blah. She also ends up meeting Sister Gwen, who ends up having the room adjacent to hers. They actually share a bathroom. And we find out that Sister Gwen was basically just a girl who had a boyfriend. The boyfriend started getting abusive and hit her. She actually makes the comment that I hit him back. And then after that, she basically says that she, you know, ran away from her hometown. And she basically saw nuns, and she saw them as women who, you know, are taken care of. They have a place to stay. They have food to eat. They can work without having to take off their clothes, I think was her exact line. So it all looked really appealing to a girl who just got out of an abusive relationship. So she decided to join. After that, you know, I'm going to skip a lot of, like, the ominous scenes. We get some ominous scenes of, like, Cecilia seeing images throughout the monastery, seeing a nun standing in her room, but then turning on the lights and the nun is gone. Just a lot of that tropey haunted house stuff, you know. I'm going to skip all that. And basically get to the next plot point, which is suddenly Cecilia gets sick one morning. She throws up in the bathhouse where the nuns bathe. It's kind of interesting watching nuns bathe because they actually wear a robe while they bathe. Like, they never actually get full on naked. Kind of weird looking, but just something I'm not used to. That's all. So let's see. Where was I? She gets sick in the bathhouse. And there's a doctor there named Dr. Gallo. I thought they said Dr. Giallo the first time they said his name. I'm like, okay, I like so Dr. Giallo.
It wasn't just you. It wasn't just me.
Oh, no, it wasn't just you. I thought they said Giallo. It wasn't until I watched the movie the second time that I'm like, oh, Gallo. Okay. I think it was just their Italian accents.
My thing was like, they call him Gallo accent.
Yeah, exactly. Because Isabella is the one who introduces him, and she's Italian. So I think her Italian accent just made Gallo sound like Giallo. But anyway, the doctor examines Sister Cecilia, and then they start bombarding her with all these questions about her vows. The three vows that she took when she went there were a vow of poverty, a vow of chastity, and what was the third one? Poverty, chastity, and shit. I can't think of it. But anyway, poverty and chastity. Chastity is the one that we're interested in here. They ask her if she's kept to her vows, to all three of them, and she says, yes, I absolutely have. And then they ask her, you know, have you ever been with a man? Have you been with a man recently? Were you with a man right before you came to the monastery? And she's like, no, I'm a virgin. And the doctor, Dr. Gallo, actually confirms that, yes, her hymen is intact, which technically doesn't mean anything because girls can break their hymens in multiple ways that have nothing to do with sex. But again, I'm going to throw logic out the window and just accept that the doctor says when she, you know, when she got her exam, when she first showed up, her hymen was intact. So it was decided, yes, she is a virgin. Anyway, I guess you guys, anybody who hasn't seen the movie probably knows where we're going with this. Plus, on top of the fact that the title of the movie is Immaculate. Yes. At this point, Sister Cecilia is told that she is pregnant, even though she is an absolute virgin. She has not had sex. The doctor, like I said, Dr. Gallo, again examines her, reconfirms that her hymen is still intact, and it is deemed an immaculate conception, very much like the original immaculate conception with, you know, Mary, Joseph, and Jesus. So obviously she's confused. She doesn't know what the hell is going on. You know, she has to accept that this is a miracle from God, even though you can tell. I mean, she's an American amongst a bunch of Europeans. So, you know, Americans are naturally skeptical. You know, we question everything. So, of course, you know, it doesn't seem like she fully buys into it at any point in the film. She plays along for a while, yes, especially because early on she's still so confused as to how this could happen, blah, blah, blah. So we then fast forward to her second trimester. We see her taking a bath one day after once again getting sick that morning, puking into the toilet. She then goes to take a bath, and while in the bathtub, Sister Isabel, the bitch from earlier, comes in and literally tries to fucking drown her. Basically holds her down under the bathwater. Cecilia is able to bite Isabella's hand to kind of break free of that hold. But then Isabella jumps into the bath, basically does, for MMA fans, a rear naked choke, grabs Cecilia from behind, and is basically trying to choke the life out of her, choke her to death. While she's doing this, she's screaming, "It should have been me, it should have been me." Obviously, without context, we don't know what the hell she's necessarily talking about. Obviously, I think most people will figure that it's the Immaculate Conception, but why is she so bitchy that it should have been her, blah, 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 blah. Eventually, the Mother Superior comes in. They're able to take Isabella out of there. As Isabella is being dragged out of the room, she keeps saying, "Try again with me, please, try again with me. Maybe, you know, I can get it done on the second time or something." Again, out of context, not really knowing what she's talking about. Cecilia is then taken up to Dr. Gallows after the attack. It's determined that the baby is safe. He didn't get any injuries. And then Father Tedeschi very slyly basically says, "Oh, don't worry about Isabella. That's never going to happen again." And as horror fans, I think we fucking know what's about to happen. That night, Cecilia is... Oh, wait, I skipped something first. Before that night, so that same day, the day of the attack, later in the afternoon, the sun is still out, we see Cecilia walking around, and now that Cecilia has been deemed, you know, the Immaculate Conception woman, she dresses differently, like she's got more ornate clothes on, like she's not dressed like any of the normal nuns, she's got like her own special little outfit. Every time a nun walks by her, they always say, you know, "God bless you, young mother, bless you, you know, you're a saint," things like that. And literally, she's just walking through the courtyard nonchalantly, you know, just kind of, you can see, what's funny is that in this scene, you can see the bruises on her neck from where Isabella tried to strangle her. So I thought that was a nice touch, because it's not like the camera focuses on it. It just, in passing, I noticed that there were bruises on her neck. So again, just a nice touch from the filmmakers. So like I said, as Cecilia's walking through the courtyard, suddenly the camera pans up to the roof of the monastery, and we see a female figure standing up there. Now, the way that the shot is set up, the camera is on the side of Cecilia. She is in the foreground. In the far background, probably a good 25, 30 feet behind Cecilia, is where we see the out-of-focus female image at the top of the monastery. Cecilia continues walking without noticing that she's up there, and then suddenly the person jumps, or, well, at least we think she jumps. It's quite possible that she was pushed. Cecilia sees that someone fell off the roof, so she rushes over. The body is basically flat on its face. It landed flat on its face. So they go to turn the body over, and when they turn the body over, it turns out that it is Sister Isabella, the girl who attacked Cecilia earlier in the day, and her face is just wrecked. It looks like she landed on her face, because she's on a cobblestone walkway. You can see the cobblestone on the ground, and when they flip her over, it looks like something peeled her fucking face off. Like, it's all just covered in blood, there's exposed flesh, it doesn't look like she has eyelids anymore, like the eyes were all big and open. So Isabella either decided she couldn't take it anymore, or was more than likely pushed, probably by Father Tedeschi or potentially the Cardinal Franco. Anyway... After that, Sister Gwen gets frustrated. We see Cecilia and Gwen walking towards, you know, their daily duties, you know, walking to go do their jobs for the day. And Gwen starts getting, like, loud and pissy. And she's like, "How can you buy this? This something is wrong. Like, I don't trust this place, blah, blah, blah." And then she gets loud with Father Tedeschi. She's like, "Why are you lying to her? You're not telling her the truth." And she says a line that's actually kind of poignant that I thought was kind of cool. She says, "I know when a man is lying to me." And considering who Gwen is, because of the bad relationship that we got out of, there's a lot of validity to that statement. So I like the way that, you know, she said it, the way that it was put out there. You know, she basically screams, "Don't touch me. I know when a man is lying to me." I don't know. That line just worked for me. Anyway, she starts creating a scene. She starts yelling at the Mother Superior. She starts yelling at the Cardinal, basically swearing, saying this is all bullshit. You know, fuck this place. I think she says fuck it at one point out loud. And then we see a couple of nuns come and kind of drag her away while she's screaming. She's basically screaming, let me go, blah, blah, blah. Now, Cecilia doesn't see Gwen the whole rest of that day. That evening, she actually goes to Gwen's bedroom to try to talk to her a little bit more about what they were talking about before she was taken away. Unfortunately, she's not in her bedroom. So Cecilia starts kind of looking around the place, looking around the monastery. She ends up finding a desk that has a file that that they've been keeping about Cecilia. She saw the file earlier, just the outside of the folder, and asked what it was, and the Mother Superior basically didn't give her an answer. So at this point now, she breaks into that desk, pulls out the file, and she sees that this monastery has been targeting her since she was a child. The first thing we see in the folder is the newspaper cutout of the accident on the ice and how she survived, how she miraculously survived, blah, blah, blah. She keeps flipping through. She sees more stuff. And then she sees, like, a DNA diagram. I don't know if you guys have ever seen one of these. That's what that black sheet that she was looking at that had all the white little specks on it was. It's like, what do they call it? It's like your specific DNA sequence, like in a form that they can read. And so basically the church somehow got some of her DNA and realized that she was the right person that they wanted, and they've been targeting her literally since she was a child. Finally, because of her congregation closing in the States and her not having other opportunities, they finally had the opportunity to invite her out there and bring her in. Now, as she's sneaking around the monastery, she ends up seeing a message written on her bedroom wall by the last nun that stayed in that room. And the last nun who stayed in that room is, of course, the nun from the cold open, the woman that tried to escape but ended up getting caught and buried alive. The message on the wall is of a Bible passage, but the Bible passage is written in Italian, which Cecilia still hasn't learned. So she grabs her Bible, she finds the passage, and in English, the passage reads, "And Satan is so powerful that he can masquerade himself as holy light." That's the quote. So obviously, she starts – now – I'm going to have a question about this, because when I watched the movie the first time, I misinterpreted who they were talking about with that quote. But then watching it the second time, I realized, oh, she was talking about somebody else. And I'll get into that later, because it's still a little bit of a spoiler for right now. So she reads that passage, which to me, as a seasoned horror fan, makes it look like, oh, shit. That's not the Son of God that she's carrying with her. That's potentially the Antichrist, you know? That's what I'm thinking. I'm starting to think that this monastery is actually evil, that it's actually a bunch of Satanists, and that they're trying to give birth to the Antichrist. Well, luckily, that's not the case. She obviously still hasn't figured out what exactly is going on, but in her time sneaking around the monastery, she ends up hearing a scream from outside. A very familiar scream, someone that she's familiar with. She ends up sneaking outside and going to this shack, this shed, where the screams are coming from. She ends up finding like a knot hole in the wood that she can look through. She looks through it, and it's Sister Gwen. And she's strapped to a chair, and she's surrounded by these black hooded figures with the red linen faces. And they're basically, they're preparing her for something. You can't really tell what. Suddenly, we see one of the dark figures grab a contraption that's meant to hold your mouth open. It actually looks like a mini bear trap from Saw. As opposed to the big head apparatus that we see in Saw, this one is just a small apparatus that just goes on your mouth. And it looks like it's just meant to keep your mouth open. After they put the apparatus on her, we see them pull out her tongue with a pair of pliers, and with a very old-looking dagger, they slice her tongue off. And this is no cut, folks. We actually get to see this. It's not like it happens off-screen. We actually get to see them. It's obvious, you know, when you see the way it connects at the end, you can tell that it's CG. But just, I just thought it was really nice that they didn't do it off screen. They literally show the dark figure approach her with the dagger, holding her tongue out, and then he just slowly slices it off. It's not a quick, like, swipe. It's literally a slow slice. And that's, and then that's basically the last time we see Gwen. She's still screaming. Now, obviously, Cecilia at this point is like, oh, shit, I got to get the fuck out of here. She ends up trying to sneak away from the shed, but ends up bumping into one of the older nuns, you know, one of the older nuns who doesn't quite have all their mental capacities. We actually saw this woman earlier in the film cut off a piece of Cecilia's hair while Cecilia was sleeping, almost like she was trying to do witchcraft or something. But again, thankfully, that wasn't the case. In this scene, when Cecilia is sneaking, trying to back away from the shed, from the horrible thing that she just witnessed, she bumps into that nun. The nun puts her hand over her mouth and you know, puts her finger over her own mouth, you know, giving the shush symbol, the universal shut up symbol. And the woman, the old nun, hands her back this little, like, doll, that she made out of the lock of hair. Again, very witchcraft looking, very Blair Witch looking. It looks like one of the little Blair Witch stick figure guys, but it's got her hair wrapped around it. But when the woman hands it to Cecilia, she says, "You are blessed. You are a saint." You know, like, everyone loves Cecilia for what she, you know, for what she's about to do, give birth to potentially the savior. But then she looks at the nun and says, "There's something terrible going on here. We need to get out of here." And then suddenly you see the face, the facial demeanor of the older nun change from a smile to a fucking evil scowl. And then she says in English, it's the first time that this woman has spoken English the whole movie. In English, she says to Cecilia, "No one ever leaves." Which, of course, freaks out Cecilia. She ends up running, going back to her room, and then the scene ends. The next morning, as the sun is rising, we hear screams echoing through the monastery. And we can tell that it's Cecilia screaming. She's just screaming at the top of her lungs. Finally, a couple of nurses and Father Tedeschi get to her room, and when they get to her room, they find her lying on her bed with a pool of blood between her legs, like up on the upper part of the stomach, all over her thighs. The bed is absolutely covered. It's just, it looks like just a major, major miscarriage may have just occurred. She's screaming her lungs out. But because it's Saturday, Dr. Gallo isn't at the monastery. Earlier in the film, he mentions that on Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays, he works at the hospital. And then the rest of the week, he works at the monastery. So it's Saturday. They can't call Dr. Gallo because he's at work. Father Tedeschi doesn't want to take her to the hospital. Like, all through the movie, he's been denying Cecilia's request to go to the hospital. Finally, she's like, "I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Please help me. I don't want to die." Father Tedeschi finally says, "Okay, fuck it." Him and Deacon Enzo, who doesn't actually have any lines in the movie, but he's an interesting looking character. He looks like a 1920s boxer. one of those Victorian British boxer guys, you know? Anyway, Deacon Enzo and Father Tedeschi end up loading Cecilia into a car and driving to the hospital. After they leave, one of the nuns stays, you know, one of the nuns at the monastery starts to clean up Cecilia's bed, you know, with all the blood and shit all over it. She literally kneels down on next to the bed with this big old pile of bloody sheets. She takes the sheets and she literally kisses them. She kisses them with her mouth, like, literally to the point that when she pulls the sheets away, her face is covered with blood. Now, obviously, she thinks that this is holy blood. It's, you know, blood that came from the mother of our Savior. Then suddenly she looks down on the floor and she sees a single chicken feather. And she's like, what the fuck is that? So she goes to pick up the feather and then notices that there's something wrapped in a pillowcase underneath the bed. She unwraps what's in the pillowcase. Turns out it's a fucking dead chicken. Obviously, at this point, we start to realize that Cecilia, and this is the scene that Mike was talking about earlier, and I 100% agree with Mike. This is fucking brilliant on Cecilia's part. Not only did she use the chicken and put blood all over herself to make it seem like she was injured, she did it on a Saturday when she knew Dr. Gallo wasn't at the monastery. So fucking brilliant on Cecilia's part. Unfortunately, before they arrive at the hospital, Father Tedeschi receives a call on his cell phone. I didn't know priests had mobile phones, but rock on. He receives a call on his cell phone from the nun at the monastery. We don't hear the conversation, but we see Father Tedeschi's expression change from concern for Cecilia to then confusion to then anger. He ends up hanging up the phone, telling Deacon Enzo to stop the car. They stop the car. Cecilia starts freaking out. What are we doing? Why are we stopping? Go, go, go. And then Tedeschi just stares at Cecilia. Doesn't say a fucking word, just stares at her. And then we see the scowl on his face turn really angry. Cecilia instantly realizes, oh shit, I know what that phone call was. Somebody ratted me out. She instantly bolts for the car door. She's able to get out of the car, and she's actually able to get away from them for a brief moment. There's actually kind of a funny little scene where we see her running away in an open field. It almost looks like there's nobody near her, but then the camera pans around to show Deacon Enzo and Father Tedeschi literally right on her heels. They end up grabbing her, taking her back to the to the monastery, not to the hospital. At the monastery, this is pretty much where the shit hits the fan now. I forgot to mention that earlier in the film, Cecilia met a nun who, for some reason, had crucifixes branded on the bottom of her feet. She didn't know what the hell it was. When I see that, I usually think that's some kind of self-penance, because I know that the ultra-pious Christians will, you know, they'll punish themselves for their sins. You know, they'll whip themselves or, you know, put tacks in their shoes, kind of like St. Maud, you know, shit like that. So that's what I thought was going on. But then we see Cecilia is now strapped to a wheelchair. She's being pushed into a laboratory of some kind. And this is where we finally get our reveal that this monastery has been trying to give birth to the second coming of Jesus for over 20 years. Literally, somehow they figured out that on the iron spike from Jesus's cross, that there was little bits of blood, flesh, even bone fragment on there. So literally they were like, we have the DNA of Jesus. We just have to crack it and, you know, create a new savior. They figured out that if they hand the spike to a pure girl, a girl who's not known the touch of a man, that somehow there will be an immaculate conception. Because as they're walking around the lab, we start to see a whole row of failed experiments. Just dead masses of flesh, mutated babies. You know, it looks like a scene out of Reanimator. Just all these dead babies in jars. Some of them don't even look human. They literally just look like masses of flesh that just didn't form correctly. So, like I said, we get the reveal that they've been doing this the whole time. Cecilia's like, you're playing God, and Tedeschi, of course, denies it vehemently, saying, no, I'm doing God's work. I'm not playing God, blah, 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 which, of course, he absolutely is playing God, but the villain never sees the clear truth, so there you go. And this is also the reveal that, yes, Father Tedeschi is basically the main villain of this movie. You know, and not only have they been, you know, with these failed experiments, obviously because of the cold open, we know that they've killed people in the past for trying to leave the monastery. And then suddenly we see Deacon Enzo, and it looks like he's stoking a fire with one of those iron pokers. And it looks like he's just stoking like a wood-burning stove. But then when he pulls it out of this the oven, the wood-burning stove, it's the crucifix. It's a metal crucifix that's been heated red hot. And literally, we don't get to actually see it. It's kind of done off screen, but yeah, they end up branding the bottom of Cecilia's feet with the crucifix iron brand, basically to keep her from being able to escape. Because now, you know, obviously she's not going to be able to put any weight on her feet for a little while anyway, while those wounds heal. And yeah, so she's returned to her bedroom. She's locked in her bedroom. They release the straps on the wheelchair so that she can get up out of the chair if she wants to. But obviously, as soon as she gets up out of the chair and puts weight on the feet, she falls over, realizing, you know, what they did to her feet. So she basically just ends up sitting at her bedroom door, just bashing it, saying, "Let me out, let me out, let me out." You know, your basic captivity sound effects that we usually hear. She ends up falling asleep, you know, after just exhaustion. And then finally we get to the climax of the film. And it starts in the maternity ward of the monastery, or the emergency room, whatever you want to call it, the surgery room. And she's literally, the mother superior's there with her and the doctor. And they basically tell her she's literally days away. The baby's going to be born any day now, literally. The doctor ends up getting a phone call, so he ends up leaving the room, but he ends up leaving the door open, wide open. Cecilia notices this, realizes this might be my opportunity, so she ends up picking up this big ass, this thing had to be at least like 2 feet long, crucifix, just a big brass crucifix. I doubt it was solid gold. It was gold in color, but I'm going to assume it was brass, because why the hell would a solid gold crucifix be in this particular spot of the monastery? But she ends up picking it up, and as soon as she has the opportunity, basically as soon as the mother superior turns her head to look at the ultrasound machine, she takes advantage and bashes her fucking head in. Mother Superior, much to her credit, doesn't go down after one hit. Like, she gets hit the first time, and then she's like, what the fuck? Like, she realizes that she's bleeding, and she's like, what the fuck did you do? And then Cecilia hits her again. That hit knocks her down to the floor. Cecilia then gets up, straddles the nun, and just starts unceremoniously bashing her face in with the cross. And we do actually get a couple of shots of impact, of the cross impacting the nun's head. Pretty fucking gnarly. At least for this movie, this is a pretty gnarly little kill. Probably one of the better ones in the film, if not the best one. So, with the Mother Superior now dead, she basically tries to make her escape, but literally, as soon as she takes one step out of the surgery room, her water breaks. We see water splash all over the floor, and this actually made the theater laugh. She actually looks up to the sky and says, "God damn it," and the entire theater fucking laughed when she said that. That was actually pretty clever. I'll give her that. Because right around here, right around this point of the movie is where she stops speaking ultra pious. She starts speaking like a normal person. You know, she tells Tedesco to fuck off, like, you know, blah, blah. She turns into a normal American girl after she realizes what they're trying to do to her. So, we then see after she kills Mother Superior, she ends up walking outside to the courtyard, and where there's a ceremony taking place, and all the nuns are gathered, and they're singing Ave Maria, and we see her sneak up to the cardinal. The cardinal is up on the patio looking down at the courtyard with the nuns all singing. We then see Cecilia walk up behind him and basically choke him out with a crucifix, with a rosary. How the rosary didn't break is beyond me, because I've never seen a rosary strong enough to choke a human, but whatever, I'll accept it. She ends up choking the cardinal to death. We hear his neck snap, and he falls to the ground. Now, this is one thing that kind of irked me about the movie. Dr. Gallo witnesses this murder. He witnesses Cecilia kill the cardinal, and then the doctor runs away. We see Cecilia start to walk towards the doctor, and then the scene cuts, and we never see the doctor again. I don't know if that's maybe a deleted scene, maybe a scene that got cut out, the doctor's death, or did she end up just not chasing the doctor and letting him go? I don't know. So, you know, that's a faux pas on the movie. You can't set up something like that where the doctor witnesses the murder, starts to run away, we see Cecilia start following him, and then that's the last we see of Dr. Gallo. So, kind of annoying, but what are you going to do? So, after that, she ends up going back down to the lab. She ends up stealing a set of keys and going back down to the lab where she was, you know, where they branded her at the bottom of her feet. They end up very, very conveniently, they happen to have a bunch of jugs of ethanol right there, just in the middle of the room, like literally just asking to get used. She ends up, Cecilia ends up taking the jugs, pouring them all out, all over the lab, all over the desks, and all over the dead potential Jesus babies that have all failed. And she has a Zippo lighter that she took from the Cardinal, because the Cardinal was a smoker. She turns around and realizes that Father Tedeschi is right there, standing there looking at her. She then holds out the Zippo lighter and lights it. And the doctor, Father Tedeschi starts trying to bargain with her, basically telling her, look, if you destroy this place, we're just going to rebuild it. If you kill yourself, we're just going to find another candidate. You're not going to stop anything. At that moment, literally at that moment, she has a major labor pain. And mind you, during this entire finale, she is solidly in labor. There's multiple scenes where during her escape, she stops and has to deal with a labor pain before continuing to run away. So, yeah, this poor girl's going through a lot. Eventually, Tedeschi is able to get the lighter away from her because of the labor pain. Like, as she bends over in pain, Tedeschi attacks her, gets the lighter away from her. They have a little bit of a struggle. She ends up hitting him with a beaker on the back of the head, which kind of disorients him long enough for her to grab the lighter and run out the door and lock the door behind her. But the door has like a barred area, like a window, an open window that's just separated by bars. So Tedeschi, as she closes the door and locks it, Tedeschi grabs her by the hair and holds her up against the door, you know, basically trying to strangle her, bash her head against the door, anything that he can do to her. Eventually, she realizes that the ethanol that she poured into the lab is starting to leak out the bottom of the door that, you know, Tedeschi is holding her up against. Once she realizes this, she starts to try to light the Zippo. It takes her like four attempts to light a Zippo. My friends, a good Zippo should light on the first attempt every fucking time. So maybe she had an off-brand Zippo because they do make those. But anyway, she finally gets the Zippo lit, throws it on the ground where the ethanol is starting to come out from under the door. Instantly, everything in the lab goes up in flame, including Father Tedeschi. He's fucking completely just engulfed in flame. Obviously, because she's wearing a long white gown that got soaked a little bit in the ethanol, the dress starts to catch on fire a little bit, but she's able to put it out right away. It's like not even a concern in the film. She's able to just put it out as soon as it starts. And then this is one of the parts of the movie that bothers me. Instead of getting the fuck up and getting out of there after starting the fire, she sits there. She just lays there on the floor laughing like she's won, like it's over. It's like, you realize you got a whole monastery full of people that want you dead right now. Why are you sitting there relishing in this very, very small victory? And what happens? Of course, the inevitable happens. The fire system, the fire extinguisher system in the lab activates, and it puts out the entire fire in the lab, including Father Tedeschi, who is still conscious, by the way. He starts trying to slam the door down because obviously the door has been weakened because of the fire. So he's able to bash into it a couple of times and then finally get the door open, just blowing it right off its hinges. Then Cecilia decides, okay, now I'll get up and continue running away. She ends up grabbing a flashlight and going into the catacombs, which were very briefly mentioned earlier in the film. She was told the catacombs were off limits. So now she's in the catacombs. Father Tedeschi is giving chase. Father Tedeschi, who's now about 80% just scar tissue, like literally he's burnt through most of his body, but he's still fucking moving. He's still giving chase through this tunnel system. This scene is very, very tense, not just because of the stakes, but because of the fact that since Cecilia is actively going through labor, she can't be quiet. So she's literally walking through these catacombs that are silent as the grave. Literally, you could hear a fly fuck. It's so fucking quiet, but she's constantly, you know, the constant moans and groans of being in pain. And mind you, I'm not giving her shit. She's in labor. I'm a man. I have no fucking idea what labor pains feel like. I've heard they're fucking atrocious. So, you know, I'm absolutely not making fun of Cecilia. What I'm saying is that I feel like that added to the tension because she can't be quiet and you've got this bloodthirsty priest chasing you through the catacombs. How do you possibly think that you're going to get out of it? Eventually, she turns off her flashlight and hides, waiting for Father Tedeschi to pass her, which he does eventually. And then after waiting a little bit, after Tedeschi walks by, she turns the flashlight back on and literally shines it right on the body of Sister Gwen. Sister Gwen, who earlier had her tongue sliced off unceremoniously, it looks like the catacombs, quote unquote, are for all the failed experiments, the nuns who tried to escape. I mean, they didn't really show any other bodies in the catacombs, but the fact that Sister Gwen was down there and she was placed in a spot very lovingly. It's not like she was just thrown down there willy-nilly. So obviously they still had some, you know, mild amount of respect for her to put her in the catacombs. Anyway, after seeing this, she lets out a little bit of a scream, which then lets Tedeschi know where she is. She continues walking through this labyrinth of mazes in the catacombs and eventually finds like a window, like an opening, not an actual window, but like a cave opening at the end of one of the halls. She starts to get happy. She starts walking towards it. Right before she gets to it, she has another labor pain and has to end up doubling over in pain. Once that labor pang goes away, she starts to climb through. It's literally like a little short tunnel, like maybe 4 or 5 feet long, with enough room for a human to crawl through. So she starts to crawl through the hole, and of course, we're watching a horror movie, so of course she's not going to get out on the first attempt. Halfway through the little tunnel, something pulls her back in. This is when we see Tedeschi, and we see him all burnt up. Most of his face is all black. His hands are black. Like, any part of his flesh that was not covered in clothing looks like it's now black. And at this point, he's just had it with Cecilia. He's had it with her escape attempts. He's had it with all of her garbage. So literally, he holds her down. He grabs her. He holds her down. He pulls out a scalpel, a surgical scalpel, like an actual scalpel. He literally starts slicing her belly open at the bottom. Basically, he's forcing a C-section on her. Since her water broke, the baby is obviously ready to be born. And they know the water broke because I'm sure they saw the puddle right outside of the surgery room. So literally, he inserts the scalpel and literally makes like a 6 to 8 inch gash, like a giant opening. Eventually, she's able to free one of her hands and grab the spike, the iron spike, you know, the Jesus spike. She actually, right before she made her escape attempt, she actually went back to the altar and grabbed it. I don't know if it was her intention to steal it or use it as a weapon, whatever. But in this particular case, as Tedeschi is slicing her stomach open, she gets one of her hands free. She gets the spike out of her pocket. She buries the fucking thing into Tedeschi's neck. The spike is long enough that it goes all the way through. It goes in one side, and the tip comes out the other side. Then she pulls it out instantly, and we see Tedeschi pretty much bleed out and fall over dead. So now Tedeschi's dead. I kind of wish we would have seen Deacon Enzo, like maybe because he was like a very mysterious character. Like I said, he doesn't have any lines, but he kind of looked like the monastery tough guy. But we never actually got to see him in any action scenes other than chasing Cecilia down in that one scene where she got out of the car. So after pulling the spike out of Father Tedeschi's neck. He falls over dead. She has yet again another labor pain. Then she climbs out through the opening, through the cave opening, and she's now outside, and she's like in a very isolated part of the woods. Like, it doesn't look like the monastery itself is anywhere near there. So she got out in a part where they're not on the monastery property anymore. As soon as she gets out of the hole, this is where she goes into childbirth. Literally, she starts to give birth to the child. And the way that they do it, they shoot it with a close-up on Cecilia's face. And I'm not exaggerating, folks, when I say it had to be about a full 2 minutes of her screaming into the camera. And I mean close-up. Like, the camera is right there, close-up on her face. She is screaming over and over and over. Obviously, she's trying to push this thing out. The camera doesn't pan down at any point. It's stuck right on her face. She's screaming, screaming, screaming. Finally, we hear the sploop. You know, the noise of something falling out of her and the splooshing noise. And she finally stops screaming. We hear the child, like, it's not quite crying, but it still has, like, phlegm in its throat. So for those of you who've had kids, you know that when the child is born, it has to get slapped on the ass to clear that phlegm out of their throat so they can breathe. She doesn't do this. The baby is just on the ground making this gurgling noise while she's trying to compose herself from, you know, the worst pain she's probably ever felt in her life. And then it looks like she starts to walk away, like she's going to just leave the child there. But then she sees a big fucking rock on the ground, a big old boulder. She picks it up. Now, obviously, she just had childbirth. So I like the way the filmmakers did it, because she picks it up very gingerly and very slowly walks it over to the baby, to the newborn child. As soon as she gets to the child, she gets on her knees. She holds the rock over her head. It's a big fucking rock. She's holding it with both her hands. And then she lets out one last blood-curdling scream, brings the rock down on the child, and the screen goes black and credits roll. And that is Immaculate 2024. No mid or post-credit scene to stick around for. But my friends, that ending did this Satanist heart some good. To watch this woman who's been pious her whole fucking life, or at least since her accident, literally looking down at the second coming of Jesus and still saying, fuck it, this thing was forced on me. This is not my child. This is not the Savior. Fuck this thing, smashing it unceremoniously with a rock. I am in such a good mood right now, my friends. I'll turn the mic back over to Mike for any closing statements. But yeah, I guess
the baby wasn't divine after all.
And you know what I found funny? In the movie, the cardinal says a line of, if God doesn't want us to do this, why doesn't he stop us? And in my head, I'm thinking, well, that's Sister Cecilia. God sent Sister Cecilia to stop your ass, and now you're all dead. Well, I mean, not all, but at least the important players are dead, the Cardinal, the Mother Superior, and Father Tedeschi. So, yeah, that was God answering you, you dumb fuck. I love that.
Yeah, so my questions kind of arise from, like, so is this, like, a normal convent for some parts, but then it's just like sinister stuff going on? Because you would think, because like obviously the cold opening, I think it was a cold opening, suggested that they've been trying this. So like this Sydney Sweeney's character, she's not the first one to go through this. So you would think eventually, like, enough nuns go missing or end up dead, whether they can paint it as, like, accidents or suicides or whatever, it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, how many times have they tried this unsuccessfully? And I guess finally they got it to go through. Unless it's, like, relatively new experiments, but with their setup.
No, don't forget.
You see all those old...
Tedeschi said they've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah,
he said it when he was walking, right? Right before they branded her feet. He said, we've been trying this for 20 years. And that's when he showed her the whole row of all the failed experiments in the jars. So what, yeah, it's been 20
years. Was the branding of the feet just a way to make her not be able to escape for the time
exactly.
being?
That's probably why they did it to the old nun who had those. Because she, I would imagine that the nuns that are still at this monastery are nuns that have gone through the process, but even after they failed, still didn't lose sight of what the monastery was trying to do, and they stuck around. Because, like I said, Isabel, she obviously was a candidate at one point, but she stuck around after hers failed. And then we see that old nun with the branded feet. She obviously went through pretty much the same shit Cecilia went through. You know, getting pregnant, trying to escape, getting the bottom of her feet branded. But then she decides to stay at the monastery for one reason or another. So, yeah, I don't think this is a normal...
Because it's that... I also had a question about that, because it's like, are some nuns in that convent, like, willingly going through it versus some are, like, tricked into it, I guess?
I think they're all tricked into it, but it's just that after they realize that Tedeschi is trying to give birth to, you know, the second coming of the Savior, I think they just agree with them. Even though it didn't work for them, even though their child ended up dying, they understand that, you know, this is still a righteous thing to do. We want our Savior back on, you know, on earthly soil. So, yeah, I think some of them just end up agreeing with Tedeschi and joining the cause even after they fail. Like I said, it's the only explanation I have for Isabel, because, like I said, Isabel freaking out that it should have been her, that you know, it shows me that her failed and she stayed.
Yeah, I thought Isabel was, like, the last one that they tried, or at least not the last one that they tried. Like, she was at least before, you know, just before the girl that they killed off at the beginning, because that seems to me like that's the last one. So Isabel more than likely was either just before her or intervening times between when that happened and when Cecilia arrived. So she seems like she was, like, just there. Like, she just had been attempted.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I found it kind of weird. Because, like, I understand the priest. What was his name? Father Sal Tedeschi or something? Whatever it was. Tedeschi. To me, it made sense, his motivations, because they made it a point to say, like, he's, like, a recent convert, too, right? Because his background was in biology, as, like, yes. in more of the science field. So it would make sense why someone like him coming from, like, a more secular background would be like, oh, I'm going to try to fuck around with this supposed DNA on the weapon or the nail and do it. It's just weird to me that, like, the other people went along with it, because, like, you would think if you believe in the text of the Bible, you're like, no, actually, we should let things play out like they're supposed to in the holy book, not do it ourselves. But the father, I 100% see his motivation, because as a science guy, he's probably like, no, I just want to see what science can actually do, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. The movie kind of leaves you with a bunch of questions like that, like things that don't really make sense. Oh, back to the quote. Remember the quote that was written on the wall that I told you guys I had misinterpreted the first time? The first time I watched the movie, I thought that quote was talking about the baby, saying that, you know, Satan disguises himself as holy light. I thought that was implying that they were actually trying to give birth to the Antichrist. On second watch, I realized she's not talking about the baby in that quote. She's talking about Father Tedeschi. He is the evil person who's masquerading as holy light. So like I said, when I read it the first time, I'm like, oh shit, is this going to turn into The Omen or Rosemary's Baby, something like that? But it's like, now on second watch, that's when it hit me. She wasn't talking about the baby. She's talking about Tedeschi. So
I kind of do like that aspect of the movie, because I think, again, on my first watch from a week ago, as soon as it becomes apparent that, you know, she is pregnant and they're calling it an immaculate, my knee-jerk reaction is like, okay, we're doing like the evil baby thing here.
Yeah.
But then it turns out, actually, no, what their attempt is the exact opposite, actually.
Right. Like what they're saying is true. They actually are trying to, you know, raise the second coming of Christ. But the problem is they're killing multiple, not just nuns, but those babies. Like, all those experiments are human babies that are now dead. You know what I mean? Right. Granted, they're all immaculate, so it's not like they have a father necessarily. But the point is, not only are you killing nuns, you're killing babies. And if you don't think that's evil, yeah, fuck you. I don't know how a priest could say I'm doing God's work while murdering babies and innocent nuns.
Yeah, exactly. Because there was never anything in Scripture about, like, forcing the second coming or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And then another plot hole. How the fuck do we know that spike is Jesus's? All they said was that the spike was brought from Jerusalem, that someone grabbed it and brought it back from Jerusalem. How funny would it be if that wasn't Jesus' spike, that it was actually one of the murderers that was crucified next to him, and they're trying to resurrect the murderer? That would be awesome. Like, for half a second, I thought the story might go that way, that when the baby was finally born, it was going to be evil, not because the monastery was trying to make an evil child, but because that spike wasn't what they thought it was. You can't just grab DNA off that and say, oh yeah, that's Jesus's DNA. How the fuck would you know? You know? Yeah,
and even on top of that, that would have to be a hell of a bio lab set up in the basement of your monastery to extract DNA and turn it into like something that could create life, period.
big time. But yeah, that's what I mean.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is kind of like one of those fun, I almost say this is more like a mainstream version of like a nunsploitation movie, because it's kind of a ridiculous premise, but it's fun. You just can't, you have to avoid trying to like look too deep into like making any sense of it, but it's a fun movie, and I think it's a good entry point for people. Like, if people come away enjoying this, it's like, okay, let's kind of introduce them to the next step to see how far they will go in their enjoyment of these types of films.
Absolutely. No, I think this is a great, I mean, gateway horror might not be the right term, because I don't know that I'd want like an 11-year-old necessarily watching this movie. There's still a couple of intense kills that I wouldn't want them to see, but it's not ultra gory. It's not ultra tense. It's not ultra uncomfortable. I think for like young adult horror fans, this would be a good entry point. You know, we get some good performances, we get a good story, we get a very satisfying ending, at least to some people. I know some people are going to look at this ending and be really pissed off, and that's fine. It's your prerogative to be angry. You know, ultimately it's a fictional movie. It's not real. There's nothing to really get angry about. But I will say that at the end of the movie, after she brought the rock down the first time, I let out an audible laugh in the theater, and I got some looks. Let me tell you, I got some looks. Oh, God damn it. I don't care. That was like one of my most guilty pleasure moments in the cinema so far this year. And I am unapologetic about it. Hail Satan. All right, I think we're done, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've got nothing else, so.
Yeah. I'm definitely more interested in Sydney Sweeney now. Obviously, this is the first thing I've ever seen her in. Well, technically, I saw her on SNL a couple of weeks ago when she hosted. That would have been the first time I saw her. And on that show is when she mentioned that she had a horror movie coming out, so I'm like, oh, well, I'll definitely be seeing that. And then after meeting her last Saturday and I'm very interested in her career now. I hope she continues doing dark fare like this. Obviously, horror is not a prestige genre. You know, if this girl starts getting, like, you know, major big movie roles, she'll probably never do horror again. But I'd like to see her stay. I have no problems with her performance. I love that final scene. Like, honestly, you would think that 2 minutes of Sydney Sweeney screaming into a camera would get old after a while. But considering what she's going through at that moment, it was perfect. I fucking loved it.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a fictional story, fictional characters, fictional actions, fictional outcomes, fictional consequences. You're within your right to say, oh, I don't like the fact that the character did that, but that's the story they told, so deal with it.
Exactly.
And, yeah, I read an interview with her, too, where I think it was either the top five or top ten horror movies, and she had some pretty legit picks. Like, they weren't all just, like, your typical mainstream horror movies that, like, anyone could name.
It wasn't, Scream 1 through 5?
No, it wasn't Scream. I Know What You Did Last Summer. Whatever else. If you want to look into that, just to see a little more of her background with like horror, and so she seems like a legitimate horror fan, which is cool. So maybe because you know, like Anna Taylor-Joy keeps doing horror, and she kind of like was the it girl for a sec. She's still kind of technically.
I think she still kind of is. Yeah, she's got a big movie coming out this summer.
Yeah, so sometimes it depends too. It's just if studios are seeing like the kind of like the psychological horror or the quote unquote innovated horror stuff come out and actually make money. I mean, we could see like the A talent and like the it moment talent stick with horror for at least like you know a few more pictures.
Yeah, definitely. I would be curious to see where she goes from here. I count myself as a fan now. After meeting her, she's a sweet girl. Yeah, I'm a fan.
I really want the other one, or the other lady that's like an it girl, who I think is actually just one of the best actresses going right now, period, is Florence Pugh. Like, I really don't want her to leave the genre. Like,
I thought you were going to say Mia Goth, and I was going to send you a virus.
No, I just think Florence Pugh, like, I think Florence Pugh is to the level where, like, there's movies that I don't even think are overall that great, but, like, her performance is always good, like, really good.
Absolutely. And
I know she's not going to be contained by the genre any longer. She's just too big of a star. As long as she does, like, a horror movie every now and then again still, I'll be happy.
Yeah, Florence Pugh, 100% agree. I mean, she was the best part of that terrible Black Widow movie. And of course, The Witch, not The Witch, Hereditary. Hereditary is like a top three movie for me of the last 25 years.
What do you mean, Midsommar? Midsommar.
I meant Midsommar, my bad.
Yeah, and like that movie, I think it was either last year or the year before. What was it? Don't Worry, Darling? I was very like lukewarm on that, but I thought she was excellent.
I didn't see it, but maybe I'll go back and check it out now that I know she's in it.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
She's good. Awesome. All right, cool. All right, well, that's going to wrap up this episode of a Fresh Cuts podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. But what have we been up to since our last recording? Well, now's the time to find out. Venom, what have you been up to?
Let's see. Creature Comforts, episode 24, is still our latest episode where we looked at 1995 Species. We're going to be recording in the next few days, probably this weekend, this coming weekend, we'll be recording our review of Godzilla Cross Kong, The New Empire, which I've already seen twice, and I plan on seeing at least two more times before we review it. People might think that it's like the be-all, end-all Godzilla movie. It's a fun Godzilla movie. That's about as much as I'm going to say right now. It's a popcorn movie. Don't look for great storylines, blah, blah, blah. But we'll obviously get more in-depth with that review on the next episode of Creature Comforts. Let's see. The Crystal Lake Gift Shop, episode 4, is still the latest episode of that one, where we looked at episode 4 of Friday the 13th, the series, which is entitled A Cup of Time for that particular episode, joined once again by our favorite store clerk, Miss Lacey Liu. Let's see, the main show, episode 58, I believe, is finally out. That on that episode, we looked at a couple of Mike's picks, which were a couple of William Castle movies, Straight Jacket and Homicidal, which were both first-time watches for me, so tune into that one to see what we all thought of those, plus all our regular segments, what we've been watching, horror news, everything else. And then one guest spot that I can announce that has not been recorded yet, but as it appears right now, it looks like I'm going to be doing a double dip of The First Omen. I'm going to be doing a retrospective, a franchise retrospective with Cut to the Chase on The Omen, where we're going to look at all six films That includes the original four Omen films, the remake from 2006, and then, of course, the new one, which releases this Friday. So I'll be double-dipping on the first Omen. I'm not sure which review is going to get recorded first. I would imagine Fresh Cuts will get recorded first, but we'll see. So, yeah, look out for me on a future episode of Cuts of the Chase, where we'll look at the Omen franchise, which is an interesting franchise to talk about. You know, it's got amazing highs, but it also has some very, very low lows. But it's going to be an interesting conversation regardless, so look out for that one. And I think that's about all I have.
I agree. There's some highs, lows, and one surprising one that you would never think that I would like, but it's just so absurd that it's actually fun. But maybe I'll share more of that like after the fact. Maybe by the time we record the next main episode, you'll have recorded that Cut to the Chase, and you can tell us some about it. I'll expound upon it. But for now, let's go to Don. Don, what do you got since we last recorded?
Yeah, I guess we're, you know, in the final stages of Godzilla X Kong, which I will reserve judgment for until the proper time. I had a couple of my guest spots are probably a little past due by now, but go ahead and listen to Would You Die and The Horror Returns. Guest spots were probably within the last month, but, you know, yeah, you can still find them pretty easily on each of their respective shows. And like I said, I'm doing bi-weekly now for the rest of the season on Horror Countdown. So today was release day, or at least today when we recorded this. It's been a few days by the time you hear it, but my latest episode is a look at films with killer women. So yeah, you know, your traditional female killers. Not really going to go too deeply into that one. I think that one's pretty self-explanatory, but it's one of the few that I did mention at the very beginning that those are spoilers, because we have to reveal who the killer is in order for the film to be ranked. So, you know, go ahead and listen to that one. But just waiting on a couple of last-minute reschedulings. We've pushed back one of these recordings for a couple of weeks, but hopefully within the next few days, I'll have something else to mention. But for now, I think that's pretty much it for me.
I actually forgot one, so let me chime in here real quick before Mike jumps in. I forgot about a guest spot. On April 11th, I'm going to be a part of a live YouTube, like a live feed. And that's going to be with the YouTube and podcast network, Sledgehammer Horror. Anybody who is familiar with Sledgehammer Horror, they have a series called My First Horror Movie, which I believe Don was a guest on previously. I'm going to be joining them on April 11th. What they're going to be doing is they're doing a Would You Rather. And what it is they're going to be inviting other content creators, podcasters, YouTubers, things like that, to ask them two Would You Rather questions. I am slated to join at approximately, I think I was given my time as 9:25 p.m. Eastern. So that would be, 6:25 on the West Coast. And like I said, that's going to be on April 11th live on YouTube. So if anybody's interested to see how ugly Mr. Venom's face can actually get, go ahead and tune in and check me out there. If you want to go ahead and subscribe, if you're interested, I would say subscribe to Sledgehammer Horror on YouTube. Hit that little bell notification, and then on April 11th, when the live feed starts, you'll get a notification on your phone letting you know that it happens. I'm not sure how long this show is going to be and how many guests they're going to have on there. I'm slated for a 10-minute segment to ask my two questions. So like I said, Sledgehammer Horror on YouTube and their podcast. Check them out and check out the live feed April 11th. That was all I had. Sorry, Mike. I had forgotten about that. And they're actually really excited to have all these people join them. They were excited when I told them I had worked with Don. Like they remembered Don from his guest spot there. And, you know, they invited me onto that live feed. So, you know, join us for that one. Should be fun. I've already got my questions picked, but I'm not going to reveal them yet.
And you said this is April 11th?
Yes, sir. April 11th on YouTube. I don't know the exact start time, which is why I'm saying, you know, go ahead and subscribe and hit that notification bell. I think it might start at like 6 p.m. West, you know, Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, but don't quote me because I'm not 100% sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll try to subscribe because it, from the calculate, you know what? I was looking at March. Let me look at April. April 11th is a Thursday. It's a Thursday, so.
Yeah, it's a weird night.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I'll be done with work plenty in time to tune. If that is the actual start time, sometime around 6:30, I'll be done with plenty of time to watch. Usually Thursdays are a free night for me, so I'll definitely check it out. It's Sledgehammer Horror is the YouTube channel.
Yeah, just Sledgehammer Horror. It's a guy and a girl. So when you see the guy and the girl thumbnail, you know you got the right one. Their main show, like I said, is My First Horror Movie, I believe is the name of it, where they have different guests come on and just talk about, you know, their first memory of watching a horror film. I'm sure Don can say more about it than I can because I haven't actually done a guest spot with them yet.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. So basically what they do is, it's a man and his wife, actually. It's not just a guy and a girl. Mm-hmm. But basically they bring you on, they ask you, like, you know, what your favorite style is, what your, you know, your favorite, you know, like, subgenres and stuff like that. And then they go into, like, the first one you watched, like, your memories of it, what happened when you were watching it, like, how'd you make it feel, like, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, they're, like, half-hour videos. I mean, it's not, like, going to, you know, take up, like, a huge chunk of your time. Because, I mean, I was only on there for, 25 minutes, I think, was, like, the total amount of time on our call was, like, 25 minutes. So, I mean, they're not going to give you, like, a lot of time if you watch them, but... Yeah, they're pretty interesting stories. So, yeah, you know, like I said, if you're into that kind of stuff, then, you know, you're going to have, like, a lot of fun diving back into discovering all those episodes.
Cool. Yeah, I will definitely check it out. All right, yeah, and as far as I had everything that I would have that's new, Venom already mentioned, I do have a potential guest spot coming up, but I'll wait till it gets closer. It's something planned, but we'll see. It's still probably about a half a month away since we're about to hit April. So probably maybe the next time we record our next episode, which I believe will be on the First Omen since that opens this coming up Friday. Maybe when we record that, I'll be ready to announce it. But if that's all you got, that's all I got.
Yep. So First Omen, April 5th, and Sting, April 12th. Go out and watch Sting. If you like creature features, go out and watch it. It was fun. I can't say too much because there's still an embargo, but for whatever it's worth, I enjoyed it.
Nice. I just got a screener for that over the weekend. So.
Oh, I think Don's going to like it. I mean, yeah, me and Don like giant spiders, so yeah.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, I think that movie Baghead opens on Shudder, too. So.
Oh, yeah, I did see that, yep.
Yeah, we're going to – obviously, we're doing First Omen because it's theatrical, but we do have another release coming to Shudder. So, hey, Shudder,
considering the amount of track record I've had this year, I'd rather do First Omen.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I don't think that's even a question.
Sure. I did like that one Shudder released or uploaded, what, a week ago or so? I can't remember the name. It's pretty
You'll
much
never
like
see
a,
me?
You'll never see me. Like a small cast, single location. Yep, that's it, Don. I did like that one. Like, if we had
it was okay. It's not a horror movie, though.
I would have watched it.
I didn't think it was much of a horror movie. It's not bad for what it is, but I just didn't find it enough of a horror movie.
Yeah. I can see difference. You could say psychological thriller. I wouldn't argue that too much. But luckily, we got theatrical movies, so... First Omen, next up. Well, I don't know, man. I feel like this is one of those ones. It has the potential to be really surprising or really what the hellish.
I wasn't wooing the movie. I was just wooing that we have theatrical movies to watch.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, trust me. I have no expectations for the First Omen. The last first movie that came out was the first Purge, and I fucking hated it. So, no expectations for the First Omen.
All right. Well, with that, we leave on a cliffhanger of what we might possibly think of a movie we haven't seen yet. So take that for what it's worth. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Fresh Cuts. We will be back in about a week's time to talk again some more horror. Let's say bye to our listeners.
Later.
If you're going to force a baby on a woman, make it the Antichrist. That's way more interesting.
Yeah, and if you're going to move halfway across the world, maybe do some research on the convent first.
Yeah, thank you.
Peace.